corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, NeemWell.com, because here, the expression is still free.
Close your eyes. Imagine you're going on a journey beyond sight and sound. A journey to a place far beyond the realms of all known consciousness. Welcome.
Tuesday, 17th of May, everybody be cool, but not in the way they're telling you. We're going to rip the hype away from global warming, and believe me, the hype is spreading. The Gulf Stream is slowing down and is inevitably going to stop, or so they say. You'll find out. This is Truth Radio on BreakForNews.com.
Push me on to the next level.
And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. We just had to do it because the hype is accelerating over global warming. And also, latest development in that story, David Bellamy, a reputed and renowned British botanist, has recently been reiterating his scepticism about the global warming phenomenon. Now, leading British environmental groups are threatening to dissociate themselves from David Bellamy. We'll have full details on that later, but let's catch up first with the latest hype about the Gulf Stream slowing down. And before we even begin, we're already into some significant information. It's worth bearing in mind that these issues were first addressed by a special think tank set up inside the Pentagon to evaluate potential threats to the United States of America. They were picked up by the media famously in the movie The Day After Tomorrow. But even before that, speculation about the Gulf Stream was at the core of The Coming Global Superstorm, a book by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber. So you might want to bear that in mind as we move forward. So if you're looking for some kind of link between Art Bell, Whitley Strieber and the Pentagon, you just found it, didn't you? Anyway, moving swiftly on, who better to lead us on and into the hype than Whitley Strieber himself? In a recent special he did on the subject with Linda Moulton Ho of Earthfiles.com, Linda was interviewing the British scientist Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University. But not before Whitley himself has whipped us all into a frenzy of fear over the imminent global catastrophe, now inevitable.
In the coming global superstorm, Art Bell and I predicted that the Gulf Stream would slow down and eventually stop. Now, a group of scientists from Cambridge, among the world's leading oceanographers, have discovered that this is happening. It cannot be changed. When the Gulf Stream slows enough or stops, as it now is inevitable that it will, the world changes, and in unknown ways.
Okay, that claim is downright false. It is not inevitable that the Gulf Stream is going to stop. Not inevitable at all. And you'll hear exactly why in just a moment. First, let's check out exactly what is going on. Why is the Gulf Stream weakening?
For more than a century, a dozen cylinder-shaped columns of cold water have been sinking into the deep ocean and heading back south, and this has kept the big conveyor belt of warm to cold to warm water going in the Atlantic Ocean. But now, for the first time, Cambridge University physicist Peter Wadhams has discovered that those dozen cold water columns in the Greenland Sea have nearly disappeared.
The problem has been that in the last few years, in fact since 1997, that this area of ice hasn't formed in the Greenland Sea, because partly because of global warming and partly because the wind system has changed, and so that part of the Greenland Sea remains ice-free, and there isn't the driving force for the sinking of the water. And this means that the sinking has the volume and the depth of this sinking process or convection has been reduced, and that's weakening the circulation of water in the Atlantic, and there's a reduction in the amount of warm water that's heading north and bathing the shores of Europe to keep it warmer than it would otherwise be. That's the main thing that we're finding.
Okay, well, on first sight, it seems as if this is an unusual phenomenon and something that we should be worried about. But is it? Well, it's a slightly confused picture, it turns out. It's going to be sort of global warming and global cooling at the same time.
This is something that will take over from global warming for Europe, as far as Europe's concerned, not for America or for Asia. They'll continue to warm at the rate of global warming, but the predictions of computer models are that Europe will warm more slowly because of this effect, and in the end, by about the end of this century, Europe will be back roughly at the same temperature it is today, while everywhere else in the world will be warmer. So we're getting this effect, which will be offsetting global warming for us.
And the learned scientist sounds so confident when he makes those predictions. Predictions, of course, as ever, based on computer modelling. You'll hear more about that as we go on. But now, the $64,000 question, is the Gulf Stream going to stop, as has been claimed by Whitley Strieber and Art Bell?
I mean, I don't think it would stop altogether, because part of it is wind-driven, and so it's driven by the pattern of ocean, of winds over the ocean, that would continue. So it's more a matter of it slowing down, because the part that's driven by this vertical circulation would stop happening.
And I know, for a lot of people, that's a very interesting revelation. You see, the simplistic spin being put on this is that without the fall of cold water in the North Atlantic, there cannot be a circulation taking place in the Gulf Stream. But as you've just heard, this sinking of cold water is only one part of what's driving the Gulf Stream. The prevailing winds are driving it also, and they're not slowing down. So at this point, there is no question of the Gulf Stream inevitably slowing down and stopping. And I suppose those who believe that global warming is taking place might actually admit at this point that, yes, perhaps the Gulf Stream issue is overblown, but there's no doubt they would insist the computer models show us what's happening. Well, just how reliable are these computer models? Let's hear.
Computer models, for instance, are not the sort of be-all and end-all. For instance, the computer models that predict the global warming seem to be very good. When you hindcast them for the last 50 years, that is, go back and see what they predicted for what has happened, they agree pretty well. And so I think the model predictions are pretty good for global warming as a whole. But this effect of the slowdown of the thermal haline circulation was something that didn't even enter into computer models until very recently. The effect hadn't even been discovered or thought of. And so it was only when the people who write the models put this effect specifically into the model that they got these predictions about the cooling. So they wouldn't have got the predictions until they actually knew the effect was happening, and then they could put it in the model. So you therefore expect it, or you fear or you suspect that the computer models aren't that good, because that there will be other phenomena occurring that we don't understand, and therefore we haven't put in a model, and therefore the model doesn't predict it. So it's a kind of circular argument.
That's a very important point coming out there, that what matters at the end of the day is the inputs into computer models. If your assumptions are wrong, then your models are wrong. And unfortunately, it's no defense to say that computer models are predictable, because they've been proven right. So far, these predictions have taken place over a very short term indeed. It's only in recent years we've even had computers to do computer modelling on, so we don't have a track record of predicting long-term changes. And anyway, even if we did, some of the most basic science about the way the oceans influence weather is downright wrong. You see, it turns out, after all the hype, that these kind of changes, such as we're seeing in the Greenland Sea, are part of the normal functioning of the oceans, which are much more dynamic than had previously been thought. And here's the admission, straight from the horse's mouth.
Very large changes are going on which were not suspected, which affect large volumes of water, involve large temperature changes, and really are in terms of the scale of the planet, they are major changes going on, which often are not suspected for a long time, simply because it's so much more difficult to study the ocean than to study the land. There's not enough ships to do it, there's not enough people doing it, and so you can't survey the ocean as easily as you can survey the land, and so these things can be happening without anybody knowing what's going on. When I first went into oceanography over 30 years ago, as a science, it was just reached the point where oceanographers thought that if they sent out ships all over the world, eventually you'd build up a picture of the state of the ocean, the currents and the temperatures and the salinity and the plankton, and you could gradually build that up and then put it all in an atlas and improve the atlas every year, like explorers going out to explore the world and gradually improving the map of Africa, because oceanographers didn't think that the ocean changed very much. They thought it was you just had to map it once and there you were. But now we're finding it's just changing all very rapidly and everywhere we look, and so it's not a constant part of our planet. People used to think, well, whatever happens, there's the ocean, always there, always the same. But it's not. It's changing very fast.
Well, oh my God. So you mean to say, after all the hype, that these kinds of changes in large ocean currents are routine, are regular, are going on all the time, they're unpredictable, they're linked into wind patterns, etc.? I mean, that makes predicting the outcome of anything extremely difficult, doesn't it? Well, yes, precisely. And if you're already clapping about the Gulf Stream slowing down issue disappearing in a puff of hype and smoke, you ain't seen nothing yet. We are going to shred the entire global warming theory. With a little help from world-renowned botanist David Bellamy. This is Truth Radio on breakfornews.com, and I'll be right back.
It's just one more day. No one said there would be rain again. Won't blame it on myself. Yeah, I'll blame it on the weatherman. Get away for a while. Here I am, out on my own again. Won't blame it on myself. Yeah, I'll blame it on the weatherman. Standing on the shore, calling out your name. I was here before. I could see your face. Only clouds will see.
And you're very welcome back. This is Truth Radio on breakfornews.com. Now, Professor David Bellamy is an environmental campaigner with impeccable credentials. After all, he's the president of Plant Life International and the Royal Society of Wildlife Trusts, and he's well known to British audiences, TV audiences, as well known as, say, Dan Rather is in the United States. So when he began to express scepticism about the global warming theory, there was rather predictable shock and horror from the scientific establishment that backs that theory. After all, a guy who was arrested for trying to prevent loggers from cutting down a rainforest has a lot of credibility. And that view? Global warming, he says, is a largely natural phenomenon. The world is wasting stupendous amounts of money on trying to fix something that can't be fixed. And perhaps, David, trying to fix something that ain't even broke. Recently, Bellamy said that around half of the world's glaciers were expanding and not contracting, and that ignited another firestorm of controversy. And following that, the Wildlife Trust and Plant Life International have both indicated they intend to sever their links with Professor David Bellamy. Anyway, despite all the outrage, David Bellamy hasn't lost his famous sense of humour. On the 16th of April, in The New Scientist, he entitled an article, "Glaciers Are Cool." And he just pointed out a few facts, like the fact that Norway's glaciers are growing at a record pace, that all 48 glaciers in New Zealand's Southern Alps are growing, the Franz Josef is growing by about 4 metres a day. Even in California, glaciers are cool. Well, where else? Where all 7 on Mount Shasta are growing, and 3 have doubled in size since 1950. Further north, in Washington state, America's youngest glacier on Mount St. Helens holds a record for the fastest growing lump of ice. And one of those glaciers, the Franz Josef, which David Bellamy mentions, was actually retreating in line with global warming between 1999 and 2003, but it's now reversed itself and it's growing again. And besides these issues about glaciers, Bellamy's also recently making some very keen points, like why is it that if they're worried about global warming, why are they not taxing aviation gasoline, which is a major contributor to the fossil fuel pollution, which is claimed to be driving global warming? And why are they not taking government taxes off insulation materials, for example? And even more to the point, why are they continuing to fund the building of coal-fired power stations in the developing world, none of which are fitted with lean and clean burn technology? But I think it was back in July in 2004 that David Bellamy made some of his best points about global warming in an article in the Daily Mail, and I'm going to quote from that article here. It's terrific stuff. Global warming, he says, at least the modern nightmare version, is a myth. I'm sure of it, and so are a growing number of scientists. But what is really worrying is that the world's politicians and policymakers are not. Instead, they have an unshakable belief in what has unfortunately become one of the central credos of the environmental movement. Humans burn fossil fuels. They increase the levels of carbon dioxide, the principal greenhouse gas, into the atmosphere, causing the atmosphere to heat up. And they say this is global warming. I say this is poppycock. He goes on, to explain why I believe that global warming is largely a natural phenomenon that's been with us for 13,000 years and probably isn't causing us any harm anyway, we need to take heed of the fact that carbon dioxide is not the dreaded killer greenhouse gas that the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 72 and the Kyoto Protocol have cracked it up to be. It is, in fact, the most important airborne fertilizer in the world, and without it, there would be no green plants at all. And meanwhile, says Bellamy, the bandwagon is blaming just about everything on global warming, regardless of the scientific evidence. For example, take the alarm about rising sea levels around the south coast of England and subsequent flooding along the region's rivers. According to senior scientific advisers to Her Majesty's government, that's because of global warming. But it isn't, says Bellamy. It's down to bad management of water catchments, building on floodplains, and the incontestable fact that it's not the sea that's rising. The south of England is gradually sinking below the waves. And that sinking's got nothing to do with rising sea levels caused by ice caps melting. Instead, it's because of the warping of the Earth's crust, because the ice caps that were on Scotland are no longer there, lifting Scotland and causing the south of England to drop. That ice cap on Scotland disappeared about 13,000 years ago, which was, of course, a global warming process of its time. In fact, writes Bellamy, A recent scientific paper entitled Atmospheric Carbon Dioxide Concentrations Over the Last Glacial Termination proved it. It showed that increases in temperature are responsible for increases in carbon dioxide, not the other way around. Let me repeat that from David Bellamy. That scientific paper about the end of the last ice age showed that increases in temperature caused increases in carbon dioxide levels, not the other way around, not carbon dioxide driving temperature. Holy cow, another sacred cow, but it gets worse or better. Writes Bellamy, is that the main greenhouse gas, the one that has the most direct effect on land temperature, isn't carbon dioxide after all. It's water vapor. If all the water vapor was removed from the atmosphere, the temperature would fall by about 33 degrees Celsius. But remove all the carbon dioxide, and the temperature might fall by maybe only 0.3%. Now that is just a telling point from David Bellamy. Think about it. 96% of the greenhouse gases are water vapor, clouds. And I know that's news to a lot of people when you put it that way, but that is the case. The most prolific greenhouse gas is plain old ordinary water vapor, and that comprises 96% of the greenhouse gas phenomenon. In other words, elements of the atmosphere that help to keep heat in the earth. So you'd want to make sure your science is absolutely right if you're going to claim that something that occupies less than 4% of greenhouse gases is going to have such an effect as to warm the planet as they predict. This is a crucial point that he's bringing out here, because it works both ways. If, and it is true, that if you were to remove the water vapor, the temperatures on Earth would plunge dramatically. Water vapor is the main greenhouse gas. So what on Earth is actually going on? Well, there's two parts to that. What's going on with the global warming phenomenon, and what's going on with all the hype about global warming? Let's take part one. What's really going on with global warming? The answer is there already. We know from ice cores taken in the Antarctic that over the last 1,100 years or so, the temperature on Earth has varied in direct proportion and tracked by solar radiation. Solar radiation had risen from the year 1000 on, then it plunged in the Middle Ages, causing the temperature drop, and then it's been on the rise ever since. Solar radiation is increasing, particularly since 1950, and the global temperature rise is tracked by that solar radiation. It's like a bit of a duh, you know? It's a duh. Duh, the Earth gets warmer when the sun gets hotter or outputs more energy. So let's be completely unambiguous about this. They extracted ice cores going back 1,000 years from the Antarctic, and in the ice cores they found evidence that the temperature and the solar radiation level, the graphs of the two, coincided. And if in another 25 years' time or 50 years' time the sun decides to ease off a little bit on the energy output, well then the Earth will get cooler. In fact, the research indicated that if it hadn't been for the relatively recent rise in the solar output, if it wasn't for that solar output, we'd already be trending back in to another one of those mini ice ages. That's what's going on with global warming. There are some other cyclic orbital issues which come up as well to do with the angle of the Earth's axis, which play into this over long-term periods. But the primary driving force for the current phenomenon is solar. Okay, so now what's actually going on with all the hype about global warming? Well, part of it is that if you've got a message like the world is going to boil up, then that's an interesting message for the media. Being a climatologist and studying these kinds of trends wasn't a particularly sexy occupation. It didn't get you on primetime news if you were doing that kind of work, as long as you were predicting stuff like, well, the temperature of the Earth is rising and it probably will fall again. No. But if you're predicting virtually the end of the world, well, then that does get you on prime time. So that's a key element in all this. It's exactly the kind of story that the media loves. And, of course, the scientists are drawn in for funding reasons and for the publicity reasons into hyping it up as well. That's one element of it. But there may be something else going on. And for the pointer to it, let's go back to David Bellamy again, because one of the points he's been making recently is that wind energy systems, which have been installed in Holland and in the United Kingdom, for example, and around the world, have no chance of supplanting the existing fossil fuel burning systems. One reason is they simply don't output enough energy, and we're not doing enough of it, and we'd have to do an awful, awful lot of it. And even if we were to do an awful lot of, for example, wind energy work, we'd have a problem there. Because what happens if the wind dies down? And it does die down. What happens if it dies down for a week or two and we don't get significant winds? You've got to keep reserve capacity. In fact, you've got to keep reserve capacity, which is almost equal to your full output capacity, because in a zero wind situation, you have zero power. And why is that important? It's important because of this issue. If wind power isn't up to doing the job, what on earth are we going to use? Well, now that is a very, very interesting question. What are we going to use? One comment recently on all these issues on EUObserver.com came from Peter Sanleberry. Let me just quote from what Peter wrote, just to give you an indication of some of the energy politics that might be behind all of this global warming hype. He says that energy is fundamental to the economy, and our desire for more and more energy means that a break on energy is going to be virtually impossible. And then he writes this: renewable energy clearly has a big part to play. Well, we've heard some of the question marks about renewable energy, he goes on, but all the signs are that Europe will have to go nuclear if the energy circle is to be squared. This is not yet the European Commission's policy, because the provision of nuclear power stations is clearly a matter for member states. But it is encouraging debate, and it is funding research. And the European Commissioner for Energy has said that the dangers of not going nuclear may now be even greater than the potential hazards. You getting it? Nuclear power does have a great number of serious hazards on a very long-term basis, of course, and there's always the danger of nuclear accidents. But you see, we may have to set all of our concerns about nuclear power aside, because unfortunately, unless we resort to nuclear power, we won't be able to meet our commitments under the Kyoto Protocol. Oh, I see. So I suppose if everybody buys this sort of global warming line, then when we're trying to organise those anti-nuclear protests, probably nobody will show up. And they'll all say to themselves, well, what alternative have we got? I mean, global warming, catastrophic weather, the Earth's heating up, we can't keep burning fossil fuels, we've got to use nuclear. And anyway, we're running out of oil as well, with the peak oil. That's what people will think. We're running out of oil anyway, and the global warming thing, so we really have to go nuclear, I suppose. And I suppose I should mention, just in passing in this context, that there was, of course, another huge radioactive leak at the UK's nuclear fuel reprocessing plant in Sellafield. Back at the beginning of May, they reported that 20 tonnes of uranium and plutonium had leaked out through a fractured pipe, and they will now have to recover the liquids. It's enough to build 20 nuclear weapons, and they'll recover them using robots which have to be built and sophisticated engineering techniques in order to recover the liquids, because you can't enter the area where the spill has taken place. Just mentioning that in passing. But hey, I wouldn't like to let you, you know, be put off nuclear just because of stuff like that, because we need it, you see. with the global warming. And it's the only thing that will save us. That and concerted government action. Concerted global action by governments, concerted action by the global government, perhaps. See, we need big governments like that to save us from big threats like this, like global warming. And with their fine leadership, they will no doubt be able to convince us all that really, pragmatically speaking, we've got no choice but to go nuclear. Because, you see, we just can't rein in our current energy uses. It just can't be done. We couldn't do things any differently than we're doing them right now. And so it's impossible for us to cut down on our current energy use. We just have to go nuclear. That's it for tonight. I'll be back tomorrow with another edition. And I do hope you can take the time to join me then. But in the meantime, go nuke. For breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting. People, only someone to find. Isn't that crazy?